Hey everybody, and welcome to ZU Cast. I'm Amanda Van Hyl, and I have with me my good friend Alex Rosenberg, is going to be helping me out with hosting.
Hello.
And this segment is going to be all about Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, it is the 20th anniversary of Ocarina of Time, or at least it was in November of 2018, because it's January. Happy New Year, everybody.
So, you know, when you think about it, a lot of people got it for Christmas that year, so this is just now their 20th anniversary of Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, you know what? We're gonna make it work. It's fine. There's, like, a window of, like, 3 months where it's just gonna be the thing. Pretty much everything in the show today, with the exception of, I believe, our community news, is all going to be themed to Ocarina of Time. We will begin with our community news, as a result, with Realm telling us what's going on in the community. Then we're going to go directly into Mitchie's Corner, talking about the best and worst of Ocarina of Time's dungeons, which will be interesting.
Then we're going to have the fundamental challenges of 3D with ZU guest Max Nichols. Max used to be a part of Zelda Universe and is now a professional game designer.
Yeah, so that's cool. People from ZU doing cool things. That's fun.
Love it when that happens.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, actually. We're now going to go into the top five most useless items in Ocarina of Time with our pal Brian telling us what is the most useless items.
The controversial segment is the useless items in Ocarina of Time for sure, I think.
Probably the first most, with second coming later.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. Next we have our good friend Chugga Conroy is making an appearance with Ocarina of Love, a tribute to Ocarina of Time. Chugga Conroy is a professional Let's Player and a Wikipedia page awarded YouTuber.
That is a fact.
How many YouTubers do you know who have Wikipedia pages?
Probably like four.
Yeah, like four.
Ninja's probably one of them at this point because damn it, Fortnite. And then we go into our largest portion and probably the most controversial thing, or no, the second controversial thing. An hour of Amanda, myself, Masayanella, and Josh Lindquist yelling about Ocarina of Time for an hour. A roundtable with Peyton. It's basically a 20th anniversary roundtable is what I'm trying to say. And it's long, and it might be in parts, but...
It's a very heated discussion about Ocarina of Time.
It is, and it's fun.
We have very strong feelings about this game, and not all of them are the same opinions.
No, and we respect everyone's opinions, as long as there are opinions. If they're wrong, we tell them.
But you know, I will say, everybody had an educated opinion and they had facts to back up everything as to why they liked things or why they didn't like things. And so it was actually an intelligent conversation, as loud and passionate as it got, but it was still an intelligent conversation about gaming, and I always really enjoy those.
It is always good to have like the nice spirited debates, which is pretty good. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, so we're going to begin with our pal Realm telling us what's going on in the community.
A wild community news appeared. I'm Realm, and you can't catch me without a special item that I'll never tell you about. Anyway, let's just jump right into the news. At the top of the list is the Winter Awards. Nominations were open from January 9th until January 17th, so you missed your chance if you didn't get in on the action. If you are involved in the Zelda and/or roleplay sections, you will have the opportunity to vote for ZUers who were nominated for awards in those categories, but for all other categories, the forum staff will be deciding who of the nominees will claim the awards this season, a first for the community awards in well over a decade. If you have a problem with this, or not, Lady Sunshine will, or may already, be seeking feedback on the awards this season after the fact, so speak your mind. And if you want to know who won, Community Awards is the logical board in which to look. Had enough of hearing about awards? Well, too bad. ZU's annual Game of the Year tournament is happening now. This ZU tradition gives you the chance to vote for your favorite non-Zelda game released the previous year. Incidentally, there wasn't a Zelda game released last year. It was tragic. Popular games released in 2018 are pitted against each other in a tournament-style battle, and you control which games proceed to the next round. Help crown the best of 2018 in the appropriately titled thread in general gaming. Just to make sure that game is, well, I'd insert my opinion here, but incredibly, I've played exactly zero of the games in the running. I know, I'm boring. The staff has seen a micro shakeup in its ranks since I last spouted the news at you. Ruki has stepped down as Grand Master of the Roleplay Guild, title not official. Boxes no longer oversees the Furore Clan. Orion has taken leave of his post as Lord of the Newbies, title also not official. And Windra has stopped regulating all of your chit-chat in the General Chit-Chat Board. They may have left staff, but they will never leave our hearts. Also, most if not all of them are still around doing stuff. Guardian Finn is now Winnie's partner in moderation in General Chit-Chat, and someone named, how do you pronounce this? Real Wings? Well, not sure who that is, but they've taken the reins from Orion and Newbie Central, so congratulations to you both. Believe it or not, this is the first episode of the ZU cast produced since the release of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. We apologize. So, I'm contractually obligated to direct you to the new Super Smash Bros. Ultimate matchmaking thread in General Gaming. There's also a General Smash Ultimate discussion thread in there, but I didn't have to mention that. Crap. Well, I just did. Anyway, if you're lonely, angry, or both, and you want someone to beat up in nostalgic, virtual environments using a classic gaming avatar, then you should make your loneliness and or anger known within the matchmaking thread. TrueEdge67 recently underwent an identity crisis so impressive that I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't tell you about it. First, he changed his username to Yiga Yoshi, an interesting alliteration using the name of a cult and the name of a character from two completely unrelated franchises. Then he wanted to go back to his original name, but Cody is unchangingly Cody, so the letter put True through a long sequence of names over the course of several hours, including just TrueEdge, TrueEdge with a U umlaut, HorseEdge67, and Pokemon Go Away Camels! You probably hardly noticed it, but I certainly did, and I really had to tell you about it because it was amazing. In other name change news, Dark Link Reigns, known more recently as Dark Miku Reigns, has now decided to live his truth and changed his username to Big Daddy Biggles. We here at the ZUBC support this decision wholeheartedly and wish Mr. Biggles all the best. Oh yeah, and he's doing a let's play of the Ocarina of Time randomizer that the hosts talked about last time, so you should check that out in the creative corner. December's ZUer of the month was Winnie the Dinny. She's really just Winnie, but she's a Dinny and it rhymes, so you do the math. Castigear said of Winnie, Winnie is one of those rare people who always tries to enrich the lives of the people she comes in contact with. While I was MIA during my family crises, she reached out to me on several occasions to check in and see how I was. I don't know if she realizes how grateful I am to that, but if she doesn't, then I'm telling her now. That's one of the most touching things ever posted on Zelda Universe, and it's a perfect example of why Winnie is the best. We love you, Winnie. January's ZUer of the month is Romano British Medley, another member of the Dent Clan. There's definitely no conspiracy there. ZU's new favorite German recently came into his own as an active member of Din and regular participant in the Forum Games board. Here's what Discord host and fellow Dinny Froyo Dragon has to say to Romano. Congrats, Medley. I'm glad you decided to join and stick around. Coming out of your shell and starting to talk more had a positive effect in the forum areas you frequent. You make great contributions and really insightful comments. Keep up being cool and absolutely keep dipping into more areas of the community. You're one of the good ones. Yes, it's always great to see you around, Romano, so don't ever leave us. Seriously, don't. I wanted to wrap this up here, but my boss also happens to mod the creative corner and is threatening to hand me over to their Togepi army if I don't mention the writing contest. Nobody entered the November contest, which is awful. It's awful. Luckily, the December contest had 5 entries, the most in any single contest in many years. That contest marked the first one with a more specific writing prompt rather than a vague one-word theme, and the prompt was Something in the Snow. Luffy won the contest with a beautiful myth-like story called Soft Teardrops, while Ruki got runner-up with the far more ominous Revelations, about a group of journalists who discover the remains of an alien. Congrats to the winners, and thanks to all who entered. The January contest got started a bit late, so it's really a January/February contest. The prompt is Hidden Beneath the Ocean, and entries are due on February 17th. ZU's visual art contest is underway again after a long hiatus. The theme is Your Average Day, and you can submit anything artwork in any medium, so long as it's visible and not just a big wall of text. Submissions are due on February 28th. Additional details are in the pinned info thread in the Creative Corner, and Lady Sunshine can answer any related questions you may have. Finally, the first ever roleplay Creative Corner tournament concluded at the end of December. Four teams began epic roleplays carried out in the form of prose, which are in the process of being judged by the RPG and Creative Corner mods as of recording. Check out the events hall board in the Roleplay Guild and or the Creative Corner board for results. Alright, Eden gave me a Togepi and patted my head with a smile before leaving, so I think I'm safe now. Thanks for bearing with me, people. Want us to mention something special about you, on or offline, on community news? Either post about it in the community announcement thread and tag Realmwings or Ezlo Spirit, or you can let one of us know about it directly. I'm Realm, and this has been your Zelda Universe community news. To the newbies that I have directed here to get some info on the goings-on in the community, I hope you've learned something and enjoyed yourself while doing it. See you around, and happy 2019, everyone.
Thank you, Realm, for that update, and next we have the best and worst dungeons of Ocarina of Time featuring Michi.
This should be interesting. We should see what he's going to say.
Now this. This is the life. Sitting back, drinking a... What kind of beer is this? I don't know this shit. I'm not straight. Corona! A Rona with the lads. Cold one with the boys. Except I'm alone. Because I got no friend. Who the hell are you? I'm your clone, idiot. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's funny. Okay, cheers. Good afternoon, Master Mitch.
Oh, good afternoon, Charles.
Lovely day, isn't it? Indeed, sir. There's a telegram for you. Okay, for the 1,000th time, it's a phone call, not a telegram. It's from a certain Zelda universe. They said it was quite urgent, and they've been trying to contact you for several weeks.
Yeah, several weeks. Okay.
God's sake, give me that thing. God, I can't believe they're hounding me already. Friggin', if I could never see these people again, that would make me so happy, you have no idea.
Hey, Michi.
Ezlo, oh, how I've missed your voice.
Yeah, well, listen. You've been gone for a few weeks, and it's Ocarina's 20th birthday.
Oh, shit. Is it really? God, I'm old.
Yeah, and like, we kind of need you for this episode.
Oh, you know what? Oh, God, I forgot how sick I was. I'm so sick. I'm really sick.
Your Snapchat says you're in Cuba.
What? That's crazy talk. That's crazy talk. Someone probably stole my phone.
But I'm talking to you on your cell phone.
Yeah, well, you know, a pina colada, sir.
No. Shoo.
Well, wherever you are, we need you back. I'm activating the ZUBC teleporter.
The what?
In 3, 2...
Wait. Well, I guess I have no choice. Hi. It's been a while. I've traversed some omniverses and stuff, but I'm glad to be back. 2018 marks the 20th anniversary of Ocarina of Time. Arguably the most popular and well-known title in the Zelda franchise. Everyone knows about this game, you know? My 2-year-old cousin knows about it. Your mom knows about it. The 60-year-old homeless dude in front of the Tim Hortons asking for change knows about it. His name is Tim, by the way. Tim Horton. That's Tim Horton. He's sitting out there. It is a legendary title. And for some damn good reasons. I know in the past few years it's gotten some backlash as people kind of started taking a more critical look at it because nostalgia. And ever since Ego Raptor made his video on it, everyone was like, yeah, maybe it's not a good game. But let's be real. It is. Oh, so what's that? My favorite part about Ocarina of Time? Oh, thank you for asking. It's the dungeons. I'm gonna be real. Breath of the Wild was seriously lacking some dungeon game, okay? And it left me empty. It left me brokenhearted. So today, we're gonna be going over my top three favorite and least favorite dungeons from Ocarina of Time. And just to note, I will be using the original title as reference today, not the 3DS remake. It's the N64's version anniversary, not the 3DS. So suck it up. Just hearing that music alone should make your skin crawl. And not because it's scary, just because you know the horrors that would befall you when you entered this godforsaken temple. The Water Temple to me is easy now, just because I've played it so many times, but God, the first time, I literally had to stop playing for a year. A year! Because I was so confused. Cut me some slack, I was like 10. Okay? When people talk about the Water Temple, they really hate it. Like, they talk about it like it's child labor, except they hate the Water Temple more. Kind of makes sense. It technically is child labor, playing this as a kid. Brutal.
This isn't a temple.
Yeah, I know. It's a dungeon. It's a cavern. Whatever. Listen. Ice levels, I hate. The cold, I hate. Giant ice monsters, I hate. And they sound like... Every time you hit them with a sword, they're like... And I can't get that noise out of my head. It just haunts me. The freaking puzzle with the pushy block. And then the stupid fight with the wolf at the end. And then... I don't really have any good reasons. I just hate it. I'm sorry. Just hearing this music is gross on its own. Like, you know the developers just wanted you to vomit when you played this. It shouldn't even be a temple or a dungeon, whatever. It's Jabu Jabu's belly, okay? Listen, some people at Nintendo, I'm not gonna name names, I'm not gonna say who, I'm not gonna point fingers, but they got some vor fetishes, that's it. You gotta carry Rudo around in your head the whole time. You get the boomerang, which is lame. And then you gotta fight that squid in that spiraling thing with the spikes. And that's just a pain in the ass. That's half of the temple by itself, for God's sake. And then the boss is lame. It's like a... I don't even know what it is. It shoots elect... Why is it shooting electricity? God, I hate it so much. Oh, yeah. Now we get into the good stuff. I know a lot of people probably don't like the Spirit Temple because of the whole transition kid where you gotta go back as a kid, you gotta go back as an adult. But let me explain why the Spirit Temple is good. Number one, Mirror Shield. Sorry, what's that? It's useless? Yeah. Okay, you're not wrong, but it's cool as hell. Number two, you gotta go through Gerudo's Fortress first. And that, by itself, is cool enough. And number three, that giant statue in the front has got a nice pair... What? It's PG? Oh. Okay. That statue on the front has got a nice pair of eyes. Bruh. You want to talk about childhood trauma? Let's talk about childhood trauma. This temple, okay, and the bottom of the well. I will include both of those as the same thing. Oh my god. They sold this game, E for Everyone, and they managed to somehow sneak this in. It still gives me the creeps to this day. It still really, truly does. It's themed very well. You get the hover boots, which suck. Fair. But everything else is themed perfectly. The music is scary. And the boss... Okay, Bongo Bongo is a legend. All I'm saying is that Phil Collins would be jealous. That's it. Just hearing that music, oh my god. The Forest Temple is, to be honest with you, probably like 50% of the reason why I go back to playing Ocarina of Time ever so often. This temple is just beautifully crafted. Really, truly, everything about it is fantastic. The aesthetics, they nailed. The music, they nailed. There's such a feeling you get from entering this temple. And it's a weird nostalgic one, even your first time playing it. Because as a kid, you may have climbed up to the temple to see what it was, but you couldn't enter. It was behind you the whole time. And now it's this abandoned, lonely castle that was probably lively at once. It's such a fascinating place. Plus, you get the bow, which you can't argue with the bow. And then you fight Phantom Ganon. And you play tennis with him. What a nice guy. He plays tennis with you. That's so nice. The Forest Temple really is the best thing ever. In Ocarina of Time, I gotta say. It's my favorite thing ever. Lon Lon Ranch is by far the best dungeon in Ocarina. I'm just kidding, it's my outro music. What a fantastic game. Really did change my mind when I was a kid. Kind of shifted me, opened me up to a brand new world of gaming. I still remember the first feeling walking out into the Hyrule Field. Yeah, I'm never going to forget that. Oh shit, I think I'm crying. Okay. Well... Since Ezlo's not listening, I guess I could go back to Cuba. Or maybe I'll play Smash Bros. Instead. But I don't have anyone to play with. Yeah, you do. Idiot. It's my clone that I don't remember cloning myself with. How did you get here? I teleported back with you. I'm always with you. Even when you don't know. Even when I don't know. That's kind of creepy. Yeah. I guess it is. You know what's even scarier?
What?
That you don't main K-Roll, baby! Oh!
Shit, K-Roll! Oh, oh my god! Oh my crocodile! Oh, look at him whip his crown! Oh my god!
Oh my god! Look at his belly! Yeah, that's my fursona. I just didn't say that.
Thank you, Mitchie, for that really great segment about the dungeons in Ocarina of Time. Amanda, I have a question for you.
Okay.
What is your favorite and least favorite dungeon in Ocarina?
Okay, least favorite is Jabu Jabu's belly.
Okay.
I still get stuck in that because I have no sense of direction, and so everything looks the same, and I get lost all the time. favorite? That's hard. It's got to be either... I'm going to say either the Forest Temple, because I really like the music in the Forest Temple, and it's just really pretty. And I like the Phantom Ganon battle, because that's a lot of fun. Or the Spirit Temple.
Nice.
I like that one, too.
Yeah, I... Well, or... Jabu Jabu Diver gave me a lot of trouble, but I really don't like the music. That music is just unsettling.
Yeah.
I never had a problem with it, though, in general. So that was the thing. I think what I... You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say my least favorite is, I think, Ice Cavern. Not because it's a bad dungeon. It's just that it's boring.
I mean, there's just nothing that really stands out about it. It's pretty forgettable. It's just, I forget about it. I forget that one even exists half the time because it's not one that I think about regularly when you think of the dungeons in Ocarina of Time. And I'm sure I'm really upsetting a person who loves the Ice Cavern. And if you do, you know what? You enjoy that Ice Cavern. I'm glad you have fun with it.
And maybe just send us a letter being like, you're wrong. The Ice Tavern is the best thing in the game. Or whatever you do. I don't know. But like,
I also don't like cold, so there we go.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I'm friends with Elsa.
Yeah, and I live in the cold, so that's a thing. But no, I feel like it just is, there's just nothing there. Also, like Mitchie said, the item that you get in this cavern dungeon thing literally is guarded by a Wolfos, who you can take out in one hit. Lame.
It's true.
That is pathetic.
It's true.
So I don't know. I'm expecting more. Like,
you know, maybe it was like, this is your break dungeon. This is the dungeon that you're just going to kind of crawl through and just be like, whatever, to like get you energized for the next one. Because is the Shadow Temple after that?
Nope, it's water.
It's water. Oh, see, there you go. You need the energy for the Water Temple. You need all your thinking skills for that. So they just gave you that little easy one just to be like, ah, oh, I don't have to think. I'm just done. And then here's the Water Temple.
Yep, have fun. Which actually, the Water Temple, like, it's not even really that bad for me now. It's like, I think my big gripe was just the fact that, oh, I have to change the boots by pausing constantly. Why? That being said, I've been playing a lot of the Ocarina of Time randomizer, like, a lot this past year. And now that I have done that dang temple, like, 9 times, honestly, it's not so bad. And actually, the pausing gives me a little bit more, like, strategic, like, placement of, like, all right, do I need this? Do I need this? Not. Like, I don't mind that pausing. And it's actually not nearly as bad as it is. But maybe it's because I've just been running through it a billion times.
Yeah, you got kind of used to it after a while. It's just kind of second nature of like, eh, whatever, this is what I do.
Yeah. Favorite temple, though, is absolutely Forest Temple, though.
I love
the music. I love the design. And also, tennis. Yeah, Phantom Ganon is a great boss battle.
It makes me so nervous, but I love it. It's fun, but I always get nervous. I get so nervous anytime I have to play tennis in Zelda. I don't know why, but I do.
See, I don't. I'm just like, oh boy, get ready for some Hyrulean tennis.
It's fun. I enjoy it, but I just get so nervous. I'm just going, I can't mess up.
Yeah. Well, I would do that, and I would just be like, what timing? But why, though? I think the cool thing about the dungeons in Ocarina of Time is that it's the first time we've really get to experience things in 3D. And there was a lot of sort of like issues that had to come across when trying to create a Zelda game for 3D. And one of our actual former ZU members, Max Nichols, actually has a lot to say about that. So I will let him sort of explain what is so cool about the 3D achievements in Ocarina of Time and some of the other fundamental challenges of bringing a game to 3D.
Hey everybody, I'm Max Nichols. I've been part of the ZU community for 15 years now, and I've been working in the game industry for 8 of those years. I like to bring that perspective to the features I write for the site. Today I'm talking about Ocarina of Time, and the immense game design challenges that the Zelda team overcame to create that game. I'd like to start with a quote by Satoru Iwata, who was president of Nintendo from 2002 to 2015. He said, "Since the old 2D rules weren't applicable, everything was made from scratch. Everyone was groping their way forward in the dark, but there was an odd confidence and faith that they would make it out into the light, and that spirit possessed the whole thing. He was, of course, talking about Ocarina of Time and its development. Ocarina had the highest hurdle of any Zelda game. It had to transition to 3D and hit Nintendo's accessibility standards at a time when third-person 3D worlds were still in their infancy. There were groundbreaking 3D games prior to Ocarina, but they tended to be first-person, flight-based, or clunky to control. The big exception was Super Mario 64, which was developed in parallel with Ocarina by many of the same people. In short, Ocarina of Time had to solve many fundamental game design problems from scratch. Before we move on, let's start by defining some key terms I'll use in this segment. The first term is difficulty. Difficulty is how hard it is for players to overcome challenges. For action games, think of it as margin of error, how many mistakes a player can make and still succeed. If a game is too easy, players get bored. Too hard, then it becomes frustrating. Second term is complexity. Complexity is how much the player must learn and understand to play the game. If difficulty is about overcoming challenges within the game's rules, complexity tests the player's ability to grasp the rules or the controls in the first place. If a game is too complex, players get overwhelmed or intimidated. The third term is readability. Readability is how well a game delivers information to the player. Games are packed with info. Health bars, audio cues, a monster's tail twitch, and dialogue are just a few examples. Readability has a deep impact on difficulty and complexity, and giving the right info at the right time is an art. Get it wrong, and the game can become frustrating trial and error, or lose all sense of tension and surprise. The larger your audience, the harder it is to balance these three things, and the more important it becomes. Which brings us to our last term, one that Nintendo values very highly: accessibility. Accessibility is the art of making a game that many people can enjoy, even with different skills and backgrounds. Making games less difficult or complex can make them more accessible, but it's not always that simple. For example, Mario is accessible because its rules are easy to understand. Mario games start off easy, but they can get very hard. In other words, high difficulty or complexity can be accessible if players are eased into it. Okay, so now that we've covered our four key terms, we're ready to talk about Ocarina of Time and its fundamental design challenges. Some of these fundamental challenges are about readability, aka getting players the information they need to play. The first of these was ensuring that players would reliably see the environment and the things in it. In fixed camera games, like A Link to the Past, every switch, enemy, and door in a room will be visible within the camera frame. But when the player directs the camera, they can miss things. Here's a 1998 quote from Onuma, from an interview translated by Glitterberry. He said, "It's important that the player be able to see what routes to follow and not overlook something important. By changing the camera viewpoint just a little, you might not be able to see something you ought." The second readability challenge was conveying where things are in relation to one another, especially during combat. In 2D games, it's clear where enemies are. Distance is easy to judge, you can see all enemies in all directions, and the area of effect of attacks is clearly shown. In contrast, 3D introduced varied camera angles, depth, and height. All of these hurt the player's ability to visually read spatial relationships. Earlier, I mentioned that many of Ocarina's developers worked on Super Mario 64 in parallel. One of those developers was Yoshiaki Koizumi, who said, "If you tried to beat an enemy in front of you, the axes weren't aligned, so it was hard." In other words, Super Mario 64 had an unsolved issue. It was hard to line up Mario's facing with targets, such as a sign or a Goomba if you wanted to punch it. This was the axis problem. The game industry was still learning how to think about facing, camera, and movement as separate things that needed to be controlled simultaneously. Mario avoided this by rarely relying on facing. But Ocarina had to fix it. They wanted to swing the sword in front of the avatar. facing mattered in Ocarina. Inspiration struck when two designers in the Ocarina team saw a show together. One of them said, "One lashed out with a sickle and chain. The lead samurai caught it with his left arm, the chain stretched tight, and the ninja moved in a circle around him." You may have put it together already. That was the inspiration for Ocarina's solution to the Axis problem, Z-targeting. By default in Ocarina, movement and facing are controlled together. When you move right, Link faces right. While Z-targeting, camera and facing are synced instead. When you move right, Link strafes right while continuing to face the target. This system made distances and spatial relationships easier to read and control, and led to the character Navi. Koizumi, one of the designers, said, "We wanted to make it easy to see which enemy you're targeting, so we made a marker. But I didn't want to use such a simple marker, so I came up with a fairy." They then used Navi to help solve the out-of-camera frame problem I mentioned earlier. Navi would fly to points of interest, change color to hint at what it was, and make a sound to draw player attention. Onuma said, "She'll help you notice something that you'd previously be able to see using a fixed-point camera." In other words, Z-targeting and Navi were the solutions to those readability problems. These solutions helped solve fundamental gameplay and readability problems in 3D, but Ocarina was getting very complex. In A Link to the Past, we controlled Link on a two-dimensional plane with 8 directions to move and 4 directions to face. In contrast, Ocarina introduced verticality, 360 degrees of facing, the need to control facing, camera, and movement separately, and a toggle, Z-targeting, that changed the rules for all three on the fly. Instead of a reliable fixed-point camera, players needed to actively orient their camera. Navi would highlight things, but they had to learn how to interpret her colors and sounds. And that's all before we get into items, boots, swimming, shooting, cuckoo gliding, or horseback riding, all of which could change the rules of movement, facing, or the camera. So they had to toss the ballast. Zelda in 3D was less readable than in 2D, but they mitigated that with tools like Z-targeting and Navi. It was also much more complex. These two things together meant that the game was less accessible than Nintendo wanted. They addressed this in a few ways. First, they fought complexity directly. If complexity is how hard it is to understand a game, then just teach players, right? Ocarina of Time was one of the first games with extensive tutorials and hint systems. These have pacing downsides, and it takes longer before players can really enjoy the game, but they get more players over the complexity barrier. The second strategy was to adjust difficulty downwards. Combat had more margin of error, and dungeon puzzles became more self-contained. These solutions were imperfect, but they worked for Ocarina of Time. The game was a seminal masterpiece. It was a model for how to make a third-person 3D adventure game that was accessible and ambitious. It broke new ground in camera control, 3D melee combat, 3D level design, and immersive worlds. Nothing like it had ever been made before, and it set a high watermark that wouldn't be surpassed for years. And it etched in stone, in gamers' expectations, and in developers' minds, a blueprint for what a Zelda game was supposed to be. It cemented formulas that Nintendo would follow for 15 years. Anyways, that's about all I've got for you today. I actually delve into this question of how Ocarina of Time affected future Zelda games further in a recent feature series I published on Zelda Universe called Ocarina's Image. So search that out if you want more of this kind of stuff. Either way, I hope you enjoyed this segment, and come back to ZU anytime for more of this kind of content. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Max. That was actually really informative. I just know when I played Ocarina of Time for the first time, the last thing that was on my mind was, how difficult is it to turn a 2D game into a 3D game? And that's something you really have to think about, because when you're used to everything just being flat and bringing that to life, it's not always going to translate well. Some do better than others.
Yeah.
And this was definitely one of the better.
Which is really nice. Game design is such like an interesting line of work because there's just so many like questions that you have to figure out, like, how would this work? Why is this a choice that you are making? Because there's a lot of like sort of figuring out what the why and the how. And I guess there's a what too, but it's such like a complex thing.
Yeah, and another big thing with it is video games have a very short shelf life. So when they come out, that's another thing they have to think about is this going to catch on now? Because if it doesn't catch on now, it's probably not going to catch on at all.
Well, not necessarily, because some games don't do well.
I mean, I know
well
it's not necessarily. Some do well later.
Okami.
But, yeah, I mean, like Okami and even Earthbound, the Mother series, that caught in popularity later. But for the most part, they have a pretty short shelf life. That's why a lot of voice actors don't know what they're recording until after they've recorded it, because they want to keep leaks to a minimum. And that's actually something they told me one time in a workshop. They're going, games have a very short shelf life, so they have to do everything like fast and hard, basically.
Did they say exactly that?
Yeah, they did not say fast and hard, but they did say it does have a short... They said it has a short shelf life. They said that. And so that's something I've always tried to hold on to when I think about, like, the marketing and design and everything, like, things getting obsolete or how they age.
Yeah, because that's the other fun thing. And this is a little bit off topic, but I think it's a good thing to talk about. But, like, a lot of people make fun of, like, the cel-shaded graphics of other things. Like, oh, it's so cartoony. Here's the thing. If you look at Wind Waker HD compared to Twilight Princess HD, Wind Waker HD looks a little bit better because
it's much smoother.
It's smoother.
It is a smoother look.
And it actually stands the test of time. The problem is with gritty realism, it's fine if you're into it. That's like, that's your opinion. That's your right. But when you look at games that get remastered, unless they do massive overhauls to the game or do a full ground remake with new models, they all still look a little bit weird. Like, case in point, Twilight Princess, but a more recent example, since this is being recorded in January, Kingdom Hearts 1.5, the remix that came out
a couple years ago.
It was a remake for the PS3, and then got ported to the PS4, and then because Square Enix hates me, decided to make a whole collection of everything that's called a story so far, even though I definitely bought the 1.5, 2.5 collection, and 2.8 right before. Square Enix, why? I hate you. Just kidding, I love you. Please make Final Fantasy VII Remake go faster. Thanks.
And make a Final Fantasy 15 dating sim. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for coming to our TED Talk. But, like, if you look at, like, the first game of Kingdom Hearts, the models and the cutscenes, like,
everything
are
is just very
super
barren. Awesome.
Yeah, they're super, honestly, like, articulate for the cutscenes. But then in everything else with the in-game models, they're literally just, like, and I wish there was cameras so I can see it, but it's, like, literally, like, a puppet thing. Like, burp, 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 burp. Just literally just the mouth. And it's just like, really? You didn't do any changes when you just did the remake? Like, when you made it for 1.5? Like, come on. You could have done something, Square. But, I mean, and so it's weird. And, like, that realism didn't work as well. It might work when it's on the PS2, but on the, like, the PS4 and the newer hardware, when you have the opportunity to, it just seems
weird. I mean, you
weird.
Can definitely see how it's aged. Rather than
yeah, the age of those sort of graphical stuff is a little bit interesting to see as you move forward throughout games, and so it's interesting to see that with like game design. So anyway, just
well, you know, like out of
it.
out of all the, I guess I don't know if it's a resolution. I don't know the proper term. Sorry, the 16-bit era is the one that seems to have held on the
I
strongest
think processing power is what
it
that
has
is
to do. Well, a lot of it has to do with it's still clear enough graphics that you can see what everything looks like and you can really appreciate the artwork, but it's simple enough that it doesn't look like sharp polygons from like the N64 era.
That's true.
So it just looks like it is a style choice over the years, and so it all just holds on very well. But it's that in between that 16, so that N64, PS2 era, original Xbox, you go back and play that now, and everything is just sharp corners everywhere.
That is true. There's like, if you look at some of like the more realistic games that were on the platforms, yes, Final Fantasy VII, as much as I love it, when you look at, like, the PS4 version that's on the store or the version that will be coming to Switch this year, wow. Polygons for days. Like, yikes. But it's a product of its time, and realism doesn't usually age as well as it, something with cel-shaded graphics. That's why I'm interested to see what Breath of the Wild's gonna do, because even though it's slightly realistic, it's also very stylized.
Yeah, it still has that kind of a watercolor.
Which means it still could actually do fine in terms of how well it ages.
I think it could age pretty well because it's still got that brightness that Wind Waker has. And, you know, it's the same reason why, like, cartoons, people have been watching the same cartoons for years and years and years. Like, I mean, Looney Tunes is how old? Mickey's just turned 90.
Mickey just turned 90.
Yeah, Mickey just turned 90. And it's just because it doesn't really age. I mean, you can tell, like, what's an older cartoon, but it's something that doesn't age terribly. It's something that you can still appreciate, and it still looks good over the years.
Or at least has style, like, innovations and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, we're going real off track here, but it's fine.
Yeah, we are.
Hope maybe this will be put in the podcast, or maybe not. Anyway, thank you for coming to our TED Talks. it's the third time we said that in this one little bit, but anyway. Now, we've talked about cool things about what 3D can do, and all the cool things that it can bring, but not every game has stuff in it that's relatively useful to you. This is going to lead into our next segment, which is with our pal Brian, talking about the top 5 most useless items in Ocarina of Time.
What's up, everybody? Today we are talking all about Ocarina of Time. Me specifically? Well, I'm glad you asked, because today I'm going to be talking to you about the most useless items we find in The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Now, before we begin, I don't plan on getting into the weeds of speedrunning or obligatory items, such as the claim check or the broken giant's knife. What I'm looking at today are Link's main items, the things that you're going to see in the inventory or equipment screen. I'm going to be breaking down that while some of these items may be fun to use, they are ultimately pretty useless in Ocarina of Time. Up first is the boomerang. Now you might be asking yourself, wait a second, Brian, you need the boomerang to complete Lord Jabu Jabu and save Princess Rudo. While you're correct, Link very rarely needs the boomerang for much else within the world of Hyrule, say for a few moments during the Spirit Temple. This, paired with the fact that you turn into adult Link merely moments after getting it, makes a pretty useless showing for the good old boomerang of years past. Following the same suit of the boomerang is the Megaton Hammer. Hidden within the Fire Temple, the Megaton Hammer is practically a key and is mainly used for solving puzzles. However, there are a few instances that the Megaton Hammer does come in handy during combat. Obviously while fighting Volvagia, but also later in the game when fighting Ganon, that is, if you don't have the big Goron sword. With its limited uses in combat and inability to use a shield while using it, where the Megaton Hammer really excels is in altering the world itself. Instead of wasting your bombs, you can use the Megaton Hammer to destroy boulders, uncover hidden rooms, and destroy door mimics. While the Megaton Hammer has its uses, you can use the bombs in order to achieve these things, which is why it's number 4 on our list, just making it slightly more useless than the boomerang. Switching gears and diving into equipment, the Silver Gauntlets are by far the most useless piece of equipment that Link will get during his adventure. The Silver Gauntlets allow adult Link to continue through the Spirit Temple and has extremely little effect elsewhere. Not to mention that they get replaced shortly after getting them by the Golden Gauntlets, making them almost useless. While these are the most useless equipment that Link gets, it's definitely not the most useless items that he has. And up next is an item that is not necessary to complete Ocarina of Time. The ice arrows are completely optional for a playthrough and are not worth your time in the Gerudo training ground. And yeah, sure, they may be cool, and yes, the pun is intended, to freeze your enemies for a bit. However, this effect can be achieved by multiple other items. The only real use for them is during the fight with Bongo Bongo in order to freeze its hands. Hell, one of the gossip stones goes as far to say, quote, They say that the treasure you can earn in the Gerudo's training ground is not as great as you would expect, given its difficulty. End quote. Putting that in the game is basically the devs saying, hey, it's not worth your time, but it's a fun little extra thing. And finally, the most useless item in the entire game, the Deku Nuts. These nuts are found at the beginning of the game and can freeze your enemies in place. Other than that, their usefulness is nowhere to be found. Multiple other items, very similar to the ice arrows, can freeze your enemies as well. For Young Link, there is the boomerang, which is also on this list. If I had to take a guess, I would say I used them less than 10 times in total for all of my playthroughs of Ocarina of Time. However, I do have to mention that during my research, I have discovered that they are one of the items that can damage Ganon during the final battle. Who would have guessed that? Alright everybody, that's it. After my many playthroughs and discovering how little I use those items, I present to you the most useless items in Ocarina of Time. Coming in at number 5, the Boomerang. 4, the Megaton Hammer. 3, the Silver Gauntlets. 2, the Ice Arrows. And number 1, the Deku Nuts. As always, please remember that these are my opinions, and I am fully aware that you can disagree. And if you do, by all means, please let me know so we continue this conversation. The best place to do that is on Twitter. My handle is @itsamebt. That's itsamebt. Catch you guys next time.
All right, so that was Brian's top five. So, Alex,
yes?
I know how you feel about the number one worst item. Let's tell the listeners.
I think it's a bunch of nonsense. Listen, Brian, I appreciate you, but y'all, you're not using Deku Nuts correctly, dog. Listen.
I don't use them either.
Which I don't understand why.
I use them in the slingshot, and that's it. Because I don't want to bother with studying them. I'd rather go up and just kill them.
Which is fine, but like it helps. Like it helps in Goma. It helps when you're fighting Armos. It makes you look kind of cool because then you're like, you can't see me, huh? And then you can just sort of run the opposite direction while they're studying. No one will be the wiser. It's fine. But I highly disagree. I use Deku Nuts a handful. Like, I don't use them a lot, but I use them a lot more than most people, apparently. Because Armos, it's the best way to deal with them. Because you can deck an Armos, literally slash it, and then it's dead.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy the Deku Nuts.
Thank you. I do love them.
You're welcome.
They're great. Ice Arrows is a, you know, it's a fun little thing. That's fine. I do feel Silver Gauntlets, though. Like, you get them, and then you get a pair of better ones, and you're just like, well, cool. I don't know why we needed two of these things, but all right. So.
You can pick this up, but you can't pick that up just yet.
Oh, and then, don't worry, you'll get it for, like, literally in 20 minutes. It's fine. What?
Yeah.
So, that was a weird one. And then, I didn't really think about how the boomerang is, like, a rarely used thing. But I guess it's
true.
Yeah,
I hardly use that.
I
think I would occasionally use it on, like, a Skulltala. Like, if I killed one that was, like, out of the way and I needed to get the token.
Yeah.
I think that was about the only time I really used a boomerang.
Yeah, now that I think about it, because I've been playing through the randomizers, literally, it gets me Skulltulas and it gets me Skulltulas, it gets me Jabu Jabu. There's a couple things that you can get with bomb shoes in Spirit Temple that you don't actually even need the boomerang for, which is kind of interesting. The randomizers have sort of ruined me, for the record. But that's fair. Hammer, I kind of disagree with, but it's whatever.
Yeah, the hammer, I don't think I remember using it very much.
So, but, it's interesting. I mean, I think, like, a more useless item would be, like, the Mask of Truth, because it's not.
I was thinking that, too. Or is it Mask or Lens? I can't remember.
It's the Mask, because the Lens of Truth you need.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. Sorry. I got them confused. Well, I knew you needed the Lens of Truth. I just forgot about the Mask of Truth.
I mean, they both have of truth of it, so.
There we go.
I mean, it gets you a, oh god, what do you get in vanilla? Stick upgrade?
I don't remember. I never really cared much about
it. I had to think about that because Randomizer has ruined my soul.
Oh, and the Gerudo mask was kind of pointless.
Oh, yeah. You can get other masks in there, too. I forgot about that. Yeah. I never use those other masks. I just do that quest, and
exactly,
I'm like, all right,
exactly, because they're that useless.
Yeah. Although they did
I use them less than the Deku Nuts.
That's true. And they, although they do cause a baseline for Majora's Mask, but that's something that we can talk about in 2020. When Majora's Mask 20th anniversary is a thing.
Do we have to wait a whole year to talk about Majora's Mask? We're not allowed to talk about it this year at all.
Who's to say?
We're not allowed. We're apparently not allowed to speak of Majora's Mask until 2020.
Listen, I didn't make the rules. The gods decreed.
Well, neither did I. Ocarina of Time is a very important game to a lot of people. It was my first introduction to the Zelda series, and it was the first introduction to Zelda in 3D. It really revolutionized gaming. I know that phrase gets used a lot, but this genuinely revolutionized gaming. So Chugga Conroy, a Let's Player, is here to talk about Ocarina of Love, a tribute to Ocarina of Time.
To me, Ocarina of Time doesn't feel so old. I first played it both after Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. I know. Well, that's only sort of true. My silly little 8-year-old self tried it after hearing it was the best game of all time. I played it for a few minutes and was like, this can't be the best game ever, it doesn't even have a jump button, and then quit. But that was me back then. What I would say is most important about Ocarina of Time to me present day, for one, is the creation of Sheik. I'm sure I'm not alone on that. Sheik is one of the downright coolest characters that we have ever gotten, has an interesting story, and I think loads of people would like to see Sheik come back in one form or another. It's been a while since we've had a character like that. The other big selling point of Ocarina of Time that I still think is great today, no matter what time that it's played in, is dungeon atmosphere. I think that it was the last time that every dungeon had a really great, memorable song that's very melodic and fits the atmosphere very well. I don't think anything beats the Forest Temple for the first time and how unsettling it feels, yet it also feels kind of tranquil and you hear the Poe sisters chanting in the background. The Fire Temple also has its whole thing with the music that I think everybody knows, where there's multiple tracks for it depending on the version that you're playing, so that has some intrigue even beyond just the general atmosphere. The Water Temple, yeah, I resented those 6 hours the first time I went through it, but the general feeling of being in there is so great that in repeat playthroughs, I appreciate it a lot more. I could go on and on, but you get what I'm saying. I think the atmosphere of the dungeons was the first time it had really been nailed, and I think it might even be the best time it's ever been nailed. Even if the gameplay became the basis that all other games built off of, even if the story was basic by comparison to what would happen a few years later in Majora's Mask, absolutely, dungeons are king in Ocarina of Time.
That was beautiful, Chugga.
Thank you, Emil. That was cool. I think I really like... Hida makes a really good emphasis on the music, which I really appreciate. A lot of the music in Ocarina of Time is great. The dungeon music is pretty great. Actually, the fun thing, he mentions a little bit about Fire Temple. That is one of the one tracks in Ocarina that got censored.
Oh, yeah, because of, like, the Muslim chants, which it turns out it was just a stock sound that they used.
Yeah, but in V1.0, there's a lot of religious imagery in, or religious sort of sounding and visual content that Nintendo, when they did a remaster, was like, ooh, maybe we shouldn't do this, and remove that, because the original Gerudo symbol was the crescent, moon, and the star.
Oh, wasn't that like the crescent?
Yeah.
So that's like...
It's symbol of Islam, which...
Oh, okay.
Nintendo was like, yeah, let's not do that, which then they made their own, the Gerudo symbol that we are familiar with today. But no, yeah, some of that came out of censorship, and like, that's a really interesting one. The track is interesting. I actually haven't listened to the track without the chanting, because I've been playing so much 1.0, because Rando, and the fact that that's the only real version that I own that I've played on stream. I do have the GameCube version, but I haven't touched it.
The version that I have, it still has the chanting in it, but it wasn't the gold cartridge. It was the one that they made, like, around the same time as the gold cartridge, but they just, It was the exact same one, just on a different cartridge is all.
I think it was like V2.0 or something like that.
Yeah, I think Chuka actually told me what version mine is. I think he said it's like 1.1. It's like, turns out it's the rarest version of Ocarina because it's not the gold cartridge, but it still has the chanting.
Oh, nice. That works out. But yeah, that one's really good. I love Forest. My favorite music, though, in the entire game, Ganondorf's boss fight. That's my
Mine
favorite.
Mine is Gerudo Valley.
That's my second choice. I love Gerudo Valley.
Gerudo Valley is my jam, and it makes me want to shake my butt every time I hear it.
I just do aggressive shimmies, so similar thing.
Same thing.
Yeah, different body parts. Same thing. Gerudo Valley is great. Mini boss theme is also a great one, but Ganondorf I really like, and I actually learned this after the fact of after recording the second episode of ZUcast, because I think I mentioned it there too. The time signature of the Ganon's castle is insane. It is a 23-4.
23.
So it's 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3-4. Koji Kondo thought it was a good idea. And it works. Like, honestly, like, all the things with the music is something that we could just argue about forever. And that's kind of what we did a couple weeks ago. We did a gigantic hour-long roundtable of Ocarina of Time. Between Amanda and myself, Misaya and Ella, our lovely friend of the YouTube and Twitch space, and Josh Lindquist, who does, like, all of the behind-the-scenes sort of deal, and the avid Zelda 2 defender of the team.
Ugh.
And I will bring that up all the time.
You know he got a copy of Zelda 2 while we were at PAX last year? Even though he has, like, a million copies of it, he's like, they've got Zelda 2, and it's a cartridge. I gotta go get it.
But,
and so he would go buy like another cartridge. And I'm like, how many cartridges of Zelda 2 do you have?
Too many. I mean, I have two cartridges of Superman 64, though. That is anything. But in fairness, my first one didn't work. So I had to buy another one that did.
That's allowed.
So.
Okay, that's allowed.
And now one is just the actual one that's good on camera because the other one doesn't look good with the label. But the new one does. So that's good.
Well, there you go.
That's my story, which is great. Enjoy us yelling for an hour or so. I don't know if this is gonna get cut, so maybe it's a part one, maybe it's the whole thing. I don't know. If it is the whole thing, have fun. If it is not the whole thing, then...
You're in for a treat for part two,
oh,
that's for sure.
Oh boy, howdy. Enjoy us yelling.
There's a lot of it.
Yep.
And welcome to the Zelda Universe Roundtable. My name is Peyton Garrett, also known as Emperor P, and I am the moderator for today. And we will be discussing The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, as it is its 20th anniversary. With me, I got four very, very, very welcome people. We'll start with the ladies here.
Hi guys, Amanda Van Heil here. I'm a Zelda Universe staff member, and I do a lot of things on the site. Pretty much anything that involves talking or being on camera, that's where you'll find me.
Hi, I'm Masayanoa. I am a content creator over on YouTube, Twitch, and art sites. I do pretty things sometimes, once in a while. But mostly I just talk loud.
Okay then, and the gents?
I'm Joshua Lindquist. I'm the content director at ZU. I do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff and help manage the writing teams.
Hi, I'm Alex Rosenberg. I'm the media director here at Zelda Universe. I also do a lot of the overseeing of all the media stuff, so like the dubs and everything that you see, all that goes on YouTube and Twitch. That's kind of my responsibility, and I also do also loud things on the internet occasionally.
And I'm just here and I talk with a toaster mic. Alrighty then. So I guess we'll start with whoever wants to start, but just tell us a little bit about... Because I only played Ocarina of Time for the first time 2 years ago on the Wii U Virtual Console, and it was a garbage experience.
Well, yeah, because the Wii U Virtual Console version of it is garbage. That is definite potato quality.
And then the second time I played Ocarina of Time, I was blindfolded and had oven mitts on. So
it was at ZUthon this year? Oh, you poor man.
I'm so sorry.
My experiences with Ocarina of Time are very, very limited. So, whoever wants to introduce, you know, how they heard about Ocarina of Time or how they got into it, and then kind of their experience playing it, just kind of shoot.
So I learned about Ocarina of Time from a little magazine called Nintendo Power that I happily subscribed to. And I saw this really cool game was coming out within the next few months, and I watched all through or read through all the magazine to see like the development process. And then pre-orders opened up, and so I got my dad to take me to KB Toys because I had saved my money up from my grandma. And I went and pre-ordered the game, and that's kind of where it started for me.
Alrighty. What about you, Alex?
I've said this earlier on other, like, things. I started Zelda kind of late. Ocarina of Time was the second Zelda game I think I actually played through. That was 2011, because my introduction to Zelda was a lot later than I wish it was.
I've been playing Zelda longer than you? How did that happen?
Hey. Listen.
Alex, I was -4 when this game came out.
Yeah, well, I came out when it was, like, I was 4. So, like, listen. But I played on the Wii version first, which I was able to use a GameCube controller, which was much better. I do now own a copy of, like, version 1.0 on the N64. And it's one of those games that I constantly revisit now, not only because I'm doing a lot more randomizer stuff, but also because I just introduced a pal of mine to the game for the first time and got to sort of relive it through her, which was super fun. So,
yeah, I can't get that randomizer to work. Anyway, Josh, what about you?
Well, I'm with Amanda. I followed Nintendo Power. They promised me it was going to come out by the end of 1997. And then
I remember that.
I had to wait a whole other year.
Oh my gosh, I remember how disappointed I was when that happened. Oh my gosh, I'd forgotten.
Yeah, so I was following it quite a bit and waited every month to see if the new Nintendo Power would have any more screenshots for me. And most of the time it did not. But anyway, it was my third Zelda game. So I was very excited since I had already played A Link to the Past and Link's Awakening. I ended up getting to watch it played when it finally came out because I did not have a Nintendo 64 until a month later at Christmas. So it was my first Nintendo 64 game.
All right, and finally, Massey.
I feel like mine is a little bit different. I initially started playing Zelda because my mom was playing Zelda. She had the N64 was essentially hers, and she was playing all the games back then, and I took a real shine to Zelda because it was medieval and it was fun and there was a dude with a sword and it was all fantasy, and I've always been into that ever since I was really, really little. And I remember that I would play her file just to do the fishing because it was fun and I thought it was cute, and I was like, yeah, I'm fishing.
Fishing is fine.
I loved fishing in the game. That was so much fun. That was one of my favorite things to do.
Especially back then.
It might just be that I'm an extremely impatient person, and I've done the fishing so many times in Twilight Princess that I just hate fishing now.
They're not the same. Twilight Princess fishing is very bad.
Yeah, I think you're just like the younger generation as well. Back then, for like kids my age, that was like super impressive.
I mean, it like, felt like you were like really fishing back then. I mean, yeah, that was like as close to the real thing as you could get back then.
I don't know. When I tried the real thing, I never caught anything.
I'm pretty sure Big the Cat did it better.
But yeah,
you said like Kinect did it better. Oh my god.
Yes, I said Big the Cat did it better.
Wow, oh, I heard harsh. Kinect. I heard Kinect, nope. And I'm like,
Kinect did it better. Oh, no.
Definitely said Big the Cat.
Okay, I wanted to make sure.
That was essentially my introduction to Zelda. I didn't actually play the game in its entirety until a bit later, like when I was about 12 or 13, because Redead scared me too much, and
thank
I
you.
Was traumatized ever since.
Me too. They freaked me out so
high
much.
Five. Yep.
See, I played Majora's Mask before I played Ocarina, so by the time I got to, like, Ocarina, I was just nullified to all Redead because of Akana Valley.
I mean, also, they just dance in Majora's Mask. If you have the masks, then you never actually have to fight them.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's a topic.
They're less
for
scary
time.
In Majora's Mask, for sure.
Yeah, you do. You see them, and it's like, haha, look at those goofy dead guys dancing.
Doing them Russian dances.
Hey, all those dances are actually accurate. Don't at me. Don't get me started on that.
And one of them is indeed a Russian dance. Well, technically German.
Nope, Russian-Ukrainian. I did an entire video about this.
I was about to say, don't we have a video about this?
Do not argue the dance portion with Alex. He knows it all.
Alrighty then.
Spot on.
I was still right. I was still right about the Russian part, at least.
Yeah, I give you that, but I literally made an entire video series on this. It is probably the one video series I'm actually most proud of on anything I do, so.
Also, this is the wrong game. We're on the wrong game.
I know, but you brought it up, so I have to say it.
Just a sequel.
Honestly,
is allowed.
Yeah, honestly, the rededs, I never, by the time I got to play Ocarina, I don't feel like the rededs affected me nearly as much. What did sort of like stun me was Dead Hand, because this was a terrifying boss in an E-rated game, and when I first played it, I wasn't like terrifying, but I'm like, why? This is an E-rated game. This shouldn't be here.
Also, in the original versions, like, everything is soaked in blood, too, mm-hmm. So just putting
it
in blood is terrifying.
Even worse.
Yeah, and when I played it, it was on my television that was going out, so by the time Ganon took over, everything had kind of a red tint, so it just looked even
that's
creepier.
Awful.
It was terrible. I couldn't even play it for a while, and then I got a new television, and I played it again. I'm going, wait, this is less scary. Oh, because the TV is
Hello, welcome to Hyrule, where the world itself is soaked in blood.
Woo!
Oh, boy. Hyrule Warriors is meant for that, just the mass murder of thousands of things. Alrighty, so we're gonna jump right into the discussion topics, and this is one that I don't really care about as I play Nintendo games and not other games, but graphics. Graphics of various different games. Opinions on the Ocarina of Time graphics, really.
I mean, at the time, they were outstanding.
Groundbreaking.
Yep.
You have to remember that this is, like, the first, like, real jump to 3D that a lot of these game franchises were making, and I think the way that Zelda went into it worked really well for the time. Whether or not the game's graphics hold up today is debatable. There's a lot of stuff that still is like, man, this is really cool looking. But there are some that's a little bit weird. A lot of it, and we'll talk about that later, as we get further into discussion about like the remake that was addressed, but I think for what it was really revolutionary.
Yeah, I mean, it really set the expectation for all future Zelda games, and it also set the expectations for a lot of just games in general.
Right, I mean, like, I think Alex was the one who just said that this was the time when a lot of games were jumping to 3D for the first time, and a lot of them failed at it. That's just when you heard that your favorite series was going to be 3D, you almost dreaded it part of the time. Like when Metroid Prime was announced, like everyone just thought it was going to just destroy the series when you saw that jump. But Zelda was one of them that just got it right, and they got it right on the first try. It looks great, looks and plays great. But I mean, I actually think the graphics do hold up pretty well. I mean, it's obviously blockier than we would have today, but compared to a lot of other games from that era, it still looks pretty astounding, if you ask me.
I honestly think that a lot of Ocarina of Time's notoriety comes from the fact that it came out so early. A lot of the things that we're probably going to be bringing up is that for the time, Ocarina of Time was amazing, and it still is amazing, especially considering what era it came out in, and the graphics are definitely a beacon for that.
And that was a major complaint that Randy and Elias both had, is that everyone considers it the greatest Zelda game, but there are honestly just factually better Zeldas out there to some people.
That is an incorrect
you're
statement,
picking a fight.
But okay.
You are
very
picking
false.
A fight.
That was their opinions. That was their opinions. But go hunt down Elias and
it
Randy
is a fact
in the
that
last
it was their
episode.
Opinion, but
yeah,
it is not.
That is it.
Everyone just send weird tweets to Elias saying that you're wrong, basically.
Listen, I literally quoted, Elias pretty much verbatim of what he said in the episode. Or Randy, one of the two of them said that.
The fact that you don't even know which one is a problem.
I listened to that segment.
We recorded that like 2 months ago.
They're both wrong. And? They were wrong 2 months ago, and they're still wrong.
I am tweeting Elias right now, just, you're wrong.
Oh.
No context.
So I will make the note here. I think there are one of the things I'm noticing now that I'm playing it is that even though it's, you know, revolutionary, it is still a little bit like you can tell that it was kind of like the first and they were still trying to figure out how to make it work because Hyrule Field is still mostly barren. There are only enemies in the child era and there's nothing that you can do really in adult. At least it's what I remember, but that's the more I keep playing, like, the randomizers.
I don't think that was them trying to figure it out. I think that was a technical limitation. I mean, when you look at the development process, they actually had originally planned for it to be more like Mario 64, where you just use the castle, Ganon's castle, as a hub, and went into the different dungeons from there. So Hyrule Field really is kind of still a hub, and I think they filled it as much as they really could. You know, there's not a lot of enemies in it for sure, but there are secrets, and in the adult side, there are the Poes to find. That's really the enemies you encounter. I will give you that it is a little bit odd that the field is infested with Stout children at night before Ganon takes over, and then they are seemingly gone after he controls the whole world.
He just didn't like them.
What, your backyard isn't filled with dead skeletal children?
I mean, they also got rid of the pee hats, so I'm also okay with that, because those things are the
damn
worst.
Those are scary. When I was a kid, I thought they were scary.
The lawnmower of Hyrule.
The lawnmower of Hyrule. I like that. I actually will purposely avoid the pee hats because I just don't feel like dealing with them because I'm like, you're too much of a pain to deal with. I'm going away. Bye.
I don't think I fought a pee hat a single time during my playthrough.
You don't have to. I mean, and especially nowadays.
Yeah, you do have to.
I mean, back then, you have to remember, we were probably exploring it a lot more thoroughly than a lot of players do nowadays because it does seem empty now. And back then, it just didn't seem empty. There wasn't something to compare it to.
Yeah, I mean,
honestly,
we were exploring that like we explore Breath of the Wild today. That was our Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, it really was. And the openness of the field back then just felt like a huge adventure. And like, it was a testament to how large you could actually make an individual map in gaming. Because you didn't really have a whole lot of like large areas of that scale, and I feel like back then it was really nice to see, and it kind of felt like you could breathe almost. So even though it is empty by today's standards, it was one of those things where having it be open and vast and empty kind of contributed to the atmosphere of the game as a whole.
And also, Ocarina of Time was more about the various regions than about Hyrule Field. I mean, Hyrule Field had been explored before, but we had never explored Lost Woods like we did before, like we did in this game, or Zora's Domain like we did in Ocarina, or Gerudo Valley and all of that. So it really, it didn't take the centerpiece because it wasn't necessary.
That's true.
Yeah, that's also valid.
Hey guys, Peyton Garrett, also known as Ember P here, and I hope you guys enjoy listening to the Ocarina of Time Roundtable. This was only a 15-minute chunk out of the full 1 hour long discussion, and if you want to listen to that full 1 hour discussion, you can find it separately under the podcast, wherever you're listening to it. Special thanks to my four lovely panelists, Amanda Van Hyl, Joshua Lindquist, Alex Rosenberg, and Masayanella. The full roundtable has a lot of really, really funny moments, and I hope you guys will go and check it out. Now, with all that said and done, we're going to throw things back to Alex and Amanda. Alex and Amanda, take it away.
So that was fun.
Yeah, I apologize in advance for all the yelling and just being like, no, what are you doing? Stop.
I don't apologize.
I mean, that's that's fair. Yeah, but yeah, it was really cool to sort of do that, and the fact that I got to watch a pal sort of run through the entirety of the game for the first time and relive, that was fun. With that done, we do have a little bit of fun little feedback from the last episode. that we can talk about.
All right.
Yeah. So we got some decent amount of feedback. And so we're going to read some of it a little bit. The first one is from an email from Jonathan, who says, "Hey, y'all, I'm Jonathan. Great first episode of the podcast. Little sad to hear the beating up of one of my top three games, Adventure of Link, but to each their own. Listen, neither Amanda and I like Adventure of Link. Zelda 2...
That game is painful.
It is genuinely painful to play through. I don't know what Joshua Linquish sees in it, but...
I love the music. The music is really good. And honestly, I think had I played it when it was new and I was used to having to do repetitive games, because I mean, that's what you had to do during the NES era when there wasn't save on every game, is you just had to do the same thing over and over and over again. So I might have gotten used to it back then and I might be able to enjoy it now if I played it that way. But I played it for the first time last year and I hated it.
Yeah, like it's fine if you have the nostalgia tinted glasses, but... we don't. So, no. I'm sorry. It's the one thing I dread if I ever have to stream it. It's gonna suck and I'm not looking forward to it. Recently decided to start a playthrough of the entire Historia, starting with Skyward Sword. Breath of the Wild will probably be last since it's kind of where it fits in my head canon. Try to blend in more elements from this game all at once so it's like a true coherent story. So I expect that's one day, I hope. Nice plug. Very subtle. Anyway, ask me back, so here it is. Keep it up, and I'll make sure to keep listening. Well, thanks, Jonathan. Nice plug. Subtle. But yeah, that's cool.
All right, Skywing from the forum says, "Really enjoyed the podcast again. Great job. And we need more Alex. He is hilarious." Aw, Alex. Yay.
The first time I read that, I'm like, wait, you need more of me? Have y'all lost your damn minds? What's happening?
You're my bestie. We all need you. I mean, I'm gonna say we need more Alex. Okay, I'm biased.
You are biased, so...
I'm biased.
That's the thing. Here's the fun part. So, I've been part of this for a while, and so the big thing is the fact that when I, like, would do things, the most common complaint people yell at me is, "Hey, your voice sucks!" And I'm like, cool. And I keep getting yelled at on the internet for having a terrible voice or being annoying, so I'm used to it. And so when people say otherwise, and I'm like, "Have you lost your mind? Oh no, get thee to a nunnery! Ha!" Or something like that. So it's very weird. Skyrim's not the only person who said that, but I'm also just like, but why? Are you sure you need more of me? That's a poor choice, but...
Yes!
So...
I mean, at least they don't yell at you for having boobs like they do me.
Fair? But that's also still very rude.
It is, yes.
So, but, you know, listen, in 2019, y'all, be good people, be respectful, don't be jerks. So, yeah. Our next thing is from Guinea on the forums. "Everything so far has been interesting and creative. It's great. I was gonna say, talk about theories and stuff, but you guys had that covered in the new one. As far as suggestions go, I don't know these things, gah. Giddy really loved the desert running gag."
Yeah! I came up with that myself.
Did you?
I did.
Y'all, I remember listening to the episode, and you and Cody just went as far as you could for that joke. And I'm honestly kind of impressed, because I probably would have ditched the joke, like, after two times.
Well, thank you.
But, I
learned from Cody. I learned from Cody. But I came up with that joke myself, and I'm proud of it.
I don't know if learning from Cody is ever a good decision, but, alright, I'll allow it for this.
Cody is always a good decision.
Well...
Yeah.
Not always. We remember who we're talking about here. Sorry, Cody, but, like...
I love you, Cody.
Yeah, you're cool, I guess.
I love Cody.
Well, get ready for his TED Talk when next episode he puts a segment in where about the intricacies of digging holes for 4 hours.
Oh, dear God.
Yep, this is the person that we work with. It's great. Guinea also says, "All in all, what you guys are doing is really interesting to diehard and casual fans alike, I believe." Great. Well, thank you, Guinea, for all those great feedback.
Backset Chan on forum says, "I dig it's... disagree with Guinea. The running gag in the first one was grating after a while." You are wrong.
Well, you know what's also grating?
You are wrong.
The
it
sand in the Gerudo Desert, so.
I don't like sand. It's rough, it's coarse, it gets everywhere.
Yeah, same.
But in a positive light, though, we need more Alex and more Eslo. Yay, more Alex. Both have those really good show voices, told you, that make you want to listen to what they have to say. Like Peter Seagal. I've been telling you that for years, Alex.
I mean...
As a side note, if I'd known you read these on air, I would have changed my name. Oh well, too late now.
Whoops, sorry, man. I mean, listen, okay? Like, it's a podcast, so I always had to make, like, the podcast-y voice. You know, you want to be like, 99% invisible. This is 99% invisible. And this is a thing about flags, which is an actual
That's
segment
true.
That...
I'm using my podcasting voice right now rather than my usual talking voice.
I'm kind of, like, going in between, which is...
I'm going... My podcasting voice is very similar to my regular talking voice. It's just a bit more articulate and less southern sounding.
My articulation is pretty much about the same, which is to say it's bad.
I just drop as much of a southern accent as I possibly can.
Well, you don't have
I just
much.
Get really, especially when I start talking about Ocarina of Time and I get real into it and I start talking like that.
Okay, I guess fair.
Okay, it's just when I get really spirited that it comes out. For the rest of the time, I don't use it.
That's fine. That's fair. That is all the feedback we have. So if you gave us feedback, thank you. If you want to send us more feedback for the ZU cast, you can go ahead and send us feedback by sending it to podcast@zeldauniverse.net, or you can let us know either on the forums or on our Facebook and Twitter at Zelda Universe, or you can also just yell at us on Twitter. That works too, I guess, right?
Any of it works. However you want to get the message across, you can send a carrier pigeon if you want
or
to.
Or a raven!
Although, I mean, I can't promise my cats won't try and kill it, but you can still try and send it.
Yeah. Or three-eyed raven works too. You know, that time frame thing. They fly pretty fast, according to Game of Thrones. So, which is to say they're either, like, Air Force One or they take once. It's not clear with that show. But, that's the thing. And that's our show, too. So, again, if you want to send us feedback, you can. You can follow us all over the place at Zelda Universe. Yeah, if you want to follow all the cool stuff that we do, we're here at Zelda Universe TV on Twitch, YouTube, and Instagram. We have weekly Twitch content. Like, not weekly. We have daily Twitch content. And Amanda and I actually do a few things for it. So, if you want to check out our stuff, you can do that there.
We also have panels throughout the year that we do at various conventions.
Yes, so you can come yell at us at places at some point, maybe. Please be nice at us.
Yeah, I've got one coming up. I'm not sure when this comes out, but if this comes out before January 10th, I think.
Maybe.
I'm doing IchibonCon. Yeah, we're doing a panel at IchibonCon in North Carolina, and then the week after that, we're doing a panel at PAX South in San Antonio.
And maybe we'll do something at PAX East. Who knows? Stay tuned. We're also on... Patreon and Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr under Zelda Universe. And then you can actually hang out with us on Discord if you want. We have a Discord server, which is discord.gg/Zelda. And then ZeldaUniverse.net on the internet for other things, for news and forums and guides and other such fun things. And if you would like to yell at us about opinions that are wrong, you can go yell at Amanda or myself directly.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Amanda Van Hiel. Van Hiel is spelled V-A-N-H-I-E-L. You can also visit my website at amanda.vanhiel.com or email me at amanda@zeldauniverse.net.
What about your Twitch?
Oh, that's right. I'm a Twitch affiliate now. I'm on Twitch at Panda Princessa, and that's like the word princess just with an A. I went with the alliteration, panda, or not alliteration, the rhyming and alliteration, I guess, for Panda Princessa.
Yeah, which is cool. She does some cool stuff. And if you'd like to yell at me about everything, or about the voice, or about just yelling at me being like, hey, stop what you're doing, get some help, which, mood. You can find me at Luca_Starks, pretty much most places, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I'm also a Twitch affiliate, and this year I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff. More randomizers, more RPGs, maybe some really bad games if the cable I bought on Amazon is going to work on my PS3, hopefully.
Ooh, I want to do some bad games too. I'm definitely this year going to be doing a lot more streaming.
Oh yeah, so there's some cool things there. So you should go follow me on the Twitch. Also, I have some sort of merch, so maybe buy that. Maybe. You can also find me on YouTube at youtube.com/LucasDarks without that underscore. I don't really use it as much anymore because YouTube kind of doesn't like me as a creator, and so I can't get any ads. But I might make some cool things occasionally there, so maybe go check that out at some point. And then you can find me at alexrosenberg.net for pretty much everything else. And you could yell at me by doing that through email too, but just do it on Twitter so I can at least, like, respond with a funny gif. That would be great.
I like funny gifs.
Funny gifs are great. They're always an excellent response to things. But in any case, thank you for listening, and we will see you in the next episode of the ZU Cast. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Have fun storming the castle or wherever you're going. Goodbye.
Storming Ganon's castle.
Hey. Goodbye. Oh. Hey.
Song of... Oh, even better. Song of Storming Ganon's castle. I went there.
Anyway, that's our show. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.
And that's the end of our extremely belated Ocarina of Time 20th Anniversary Special. It took us a bit longer than we expected to get it to you, but better late than never, I always say. Just don't tell my mother I say it. Before I release you for another indeterminate amount of time, let's take some time, together, to acknowledge the hard work of everyone who contributed to this episode of the ZU Cast. Your hosts for today were Amanda Van Heil and Alex Rosenberg, partners in crime, I presume. Realmwings reported the community news from the Zelda Universe forums, which doesn't have anything directly to do with Ocarina of Time, but it was good stuff nevertheless. I teleported Mitchy back to our studio against his will to discuss the highs and lows of Ocarina of Time's dungeons, in another installment of Mitchy's Corner. Brian Thomas also returned to rank the most useless items in Ocarina of Time. Peyton Garrett moderated our roundtable discussion, which you can hear in its hour-long entirety in a separate release on our podcast feed, our YouTube channel, or on our website, ZeldaUniverse.net. This episode wouldn't have been complete without the contributions of some guests. First of all, thanks to Max Nichols, longtime feature writer on Zelda Universe and professional game designer, for offering a designer's perspective on the series' first foray into 3D. Thanks also to the legendary Emil Rosales, better known as Chugga Conroy, for his tribute to the game. And of course, thanks to this roundtable's panelists. YouTuber Masayanella, ZU's Content and Technology Director Joshua Lindquist, ZUcast and Zelda News host Amanda Van Heil, and ZU Media Director and ZUcast host Alex Rosenberg. Behind the scenes, our executive producer is myself, Eden Biskin. Cody Davies is our consulting producer and the bane of TrueEdge67's username. Our head editor is Kelly Timmerman, who is assisted by Brent Huckfield. Our public relations team consists of Pietro Bucci on the forums, Mary Stowe on our social media, and Megan Negrelli on outreach. Joshua Lindquist is our honorary technical advisor. The ZU Cast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of ZeldaUniverse.net. We welcome you to drop us a line and tell us how you really feel about what we do on this show. Shoot us an email at podcast@ZeldaUniverse.net, post in the ZU Cast 2018 Hub thread in the ZU Forum's Community Central Board, mention us on Twitter, at Zelda Universe, or leave us a post or comment on our Facebook page, at Zelda Universe. Feedback can be in text or audio form, and we might make fun of it. I mean, we might feature and respond to it on air in our next episode. Well, I believe I've overstayed my welcome. Time to go and drill my Togepi army. Thanks for listening to this episode of the ZU Cast. We hope to have the next one out in a shorter time span. Wish us luck, and we'll talk at you again soon. And don't forget to check out the full roundtable. And subscribe to the ZU Cast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or Stitcher if you're not already subscribed. Bye!
Anyway, we've got a lot of really cool things. Everything about, okay, nope, here we go. Bloopers for days. Let's begin with talking a little bit about what happened in the news of community. That's not what we should be saying. That's bad words.
The news of community.
Yes.
We should probably see what the news of the community is, because yeah. I haven't read that.
Oh, do we, is it like an article thing? Where is that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I thought we got like a little piece of paper that said, here you go.
I don't know. And there's no file on it in the drive, which is even more confusing.
So how about we just say, who is it that's doing
Realm? It's Realm, who's by the way, like 14, makes me feel even older.
Oh gosh. That's younger than my niece. That's like,
that's younger than Peyton. Who's hiring?
That's closest to my youngest nephew is 11. That kid is closer to Ben's age than anybody else. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Amanda, how did we get so old?
Oh, I turn 33 next month. 33.
Ah.
I know.
You don't look at, like, any day over, like, 27. But, God.
33. That's two threes.
You are three times the age of Ben, the 11-year-old. I don't know why this voice is a thing.
Oh, my God. That's yeah, I'm three times the age of my nephew starting next month. Oh, my gosh.
That's weird. That's weird.
That's weird.
Yep. Let's try that again. Yeah, this is a really great segment. I really enjoy it. He's got some fun comedy, and I think you'll have a good time. And then we'll discuss it when we're done. Wow. Nope. But I don't know how else to add it, so.
How about just say I'm really looking forward to this session?
Okay.
This should be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sorry, editors, if you're hearing this.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kelly. Sorry, Brent. Yeah. Well, I would do that and I would just be like, what timing? But why, though? You were here for one of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Because I was like, yay, the tennis is about to start, and then you missed your first couple and ended up on the ground.
That's true, I did.
Mm-hmm.
So, that small part will be probably cut, so you're not in the thing. That's fine.
I know.
Editors of My Track, if you hear a random person in the background, you can cut that. But, yeah. Next up is... Oh, there it is. I mean, I could go into talking about how I went to Barnes & Noble, looked at the Hyrule encyclopedia, and saw this.
Oh, I got that for Christmas. I got that for Christmas.
So I noticed this one line, and I might text it to Alan, because we're working on it. On the bottom of one of the pages with the timeline, attentive readers may note that the timeline shown here differs slightly from the one found in Hyrule Historia. The timeline can be interpreted in a number of ways and may change depending on new discoveries that have come to light and on the player's imaginations. Translation, y'all do what you Well, we give up.
It's called AKA Nintendo pulled the timeline out of their ass to appease the little fanboys.
I mean, yeah, but the problem
that's
is
that's really all it is. They pulled it out of their ass because little fanboys were like, I demand a timeline.
Well, I mean, here's the problem. Like, I get it. You don't want to put, like, yourselves in a box by putting Breath of the Wild somewhere, but you already threw you made addendums of all these other games on Twitter. Come on. At the very least, like, if you're going to try to, like, I don't know, literally make it the bottom, have everything unify again, so you can be like, fine, we have a clean slate to do whatever the f*** we want.
Yeah, I thought that's what they were saying at one point. It was like, all the timelines have emerged, have merged together at this point because it's so far in the future, it doesn't matter.
That's what I would like, because at this point, nothing makes sense. I'm worried when I have to explain the timeline to Bernadette, because I don't think you're going to get it. I don't even get it. And I work for Zelda.
I don't get it either. I had to explain the timeline over lunch with Dan one time.
How'd that go?
He did not understand. Well, I took some forks, and that represented Ocarina of Time. I took three of them. I said, okay, here's this timeline.
I mean,
here's this one and this one.
I mean, it's accurate. Basically, Ocarina of Time splits the game, or Ocarina of Time splits the timeline three different ways for some reason. Which
I can
is,
understand I the two timelines, but I can't quite grasp the three. The three is a little much.
Yeah. So how do we make this more complex? Three timelines. What? But yeah. Two is fine. Three. Okay.
So like now, anytime there's a new game, I'm like, new timeline. That's I don't know where it is. It's just a new timeline. Fourth timeline split. Here we go.
Anyway, thank you for coming to our TED Talk about complaining about dungeons or timeline placement. I really hope this gets in. Guys, someone find a way to put that into the episode.
Oh, Lord, but then I made fun of fanboys.
Well.
Oh, well. I mean, we all want to know, so it's not like it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's fine. They can edit whatever they want.
Okay. And also, it's like that type of fanboy. There's a difference between a fanboy and a, actually kind of fanboy.
Oh, yeah. The neckbeards,
yeah,
as we call them.
That's the kind I'm talking about.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right.
I'll go back into this. I'll intrude this. Go out of the transition.
Okay, sure.
Cool. Thank you, Mitch, for that awesome cover thing. Wow, cover thing. I know how to talk.
Thing.
I don't. Phantom Ganon is a great bottle. Great bottle. Yes?
It's a great bottle. Hey, I wonder how the chat. What? Hey, let me try that again.
Take two! Now, with all that said and done, we're gonna throw things back to Alex and Rosenberg. Alex and. Oh my god. There's a lot of cool things. Game design is such an interesting, like, industry job thing. Nope, trying that one again.
So Ocarina of Time is a very important game to a lot of people. For some people, it was their first introduction to the... Let me try that again.
Yep.